let's begin by take us into your little slice of paradise out there and describe what your orchard looks like.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So we're a USDA certified organic orchard. We're about 8 acres or so in trees. And in there we have around 650 fruit trees, mostly apples, but we also have some pears and cherries and some plums as well. But the focus is the heritage apple variety. So we actually grow 68 different varieties of apples.
Wow, that's great.
It seems like a lot, but when you get into it, there are tens of thousands of varieties of apples.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, they're finding new varieties every day almost, or every year anyway.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And there's some great projects in our community. The Lost Apple Project is based out of Spokane, but they're doing a lot of work finding these old, believed extinct or lost varieties.
Sure.
When you're looking for these lost and old varieties, are you looking in the Northwest, or do you go far afield to places like Michigan, another apple center in the world? There's some old varieties in Michigan, or do you try to keep it, the culture here?
Yeah, so I think it's regionally, there's a lot of different groups that are doing this. So I'm sure there's groups in Michigan and in the Northeast that are doing this kind of work as well. So, but it would be great to bring all those groups together and really find out what everyone else is finding and see what's being rediscovered.
That's great. I read Botany of Desire years ago, and every apple has many different varieties of apple in its core.
For sure.
That's
yeah.
So crazy that to think about that.
Yeah, yep. And the neat thing about apples is they have a genetic trait called extreme heterozygosity, which is the same trait that humans have in our genetics. So every seed is a fingerprint. Everything's a little bit different. So,
wow.
That's why apples are propagated through grafting, because you have to keep that same variety going.
Almost DNA, apple
yeah.
DNA almost.
Yep.
Well, since it is winter and we really want to talk about what we're doing and seeing in our trees in the winter, let's begin with pruning. When you can see the bare bones of the tree, give us an overview of what your tree looks like before you prune and then how you prune it.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that depends on how large or how old the tree is that you're pruning. You're going to prune a younger tree different than an old tree that you're trying to restore. But we're getting to that time of year that we like to do our pruning up here in North Idaho. We tend to do our pruning in the orchard the second half of February into the first half of March. And that's a little later than some other folks. But the reason we do that is I've read some studies that talk about by pruning later, you can actually push your flowering later, which is a big concern for us up here in North Idaho when we're dealing with those late frosts. So being able to push our flowering back a little bit can definitely help us create a better crop.
Right, right. And let's talk about scaffold branches on the tree. I mean, I'm sure that's important with young trees and old trees.
Yeah, yep. So the scaffolding branches, especially when you're working on a central leader tree that just has one main trunk, we're trying to create these scaffolding branches that are going to support the weight of that fruit. So what we want to have is nice, strong angles of those branches coming off the trunks. We don't want them too steep or too flat. The ideal angle is about 40 to 60 off of vertical. So it has a nice, strong union between the branch and the trunk. Because we're asking those branches to hold quite a bit of weight when you got a full load of fruit on there.
That's right. That's yeah. right. So now when you prune, are you pruning to have more fruit? Or are you improving the health of the tree, or is it both?
It's definitely a little bit of both. If you're working on an older tree that you're trying to restore and get to be more productive, you can definitely prune for that. By creating new fruit spurs and trying to get rid of the dead that's in the tree. And then also a big thing that we're looking at on older trees is creating an open canopy, something that the sun can get through mm-hmm. and the air can get through, because that's really important. We want the wind to be able to get through the canopy of that tree to dry out any moisture as fast as we can, because moisture in your canopy can lead to fungal diseases.
Yes.
But then we're also want to make sure that the light is getting to all those branches as well, because you really need that light when it comes to the ripening of that fruit.
Right, right. So open it up.
Yeah, yep, definitely. You want to have a nice airy canopy for sure.
Are your trees mostly center leader, or are they open, or does it depend on the variety?
So for our apples and pears, we're generally on a central leader. That seems to be one of the strongest pruning systems or structural systems for a semi-dwarf fruit tree. And then with the cherries and plums, we tend to go with more of a vase shape, an open shape, like a multi-leader. And part of that is because the fruit is so much smaller and lighter on those cherries and plum trees that it can, you're creating more surface area, so you can produce more fruit, where with the apples and pears that are so much heavier, we're mostly concerned about creating strong branches that are going to support that.
Mm-hmm. I remember Rich DiCarlo telling us last year that basically when you prune, you're just pruning off, if you've been pruning your tree every year, you're pruning off last year's growth.
Yeah, yep, and you can do that to manage the size or the shape or how you want that tree to look. But you can also keep some of that new growth if you're trying to encourage new fruiting spurs on apple trees, because the fruit spurs occur on the second year wood.
Oh, yeah, second year. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So I have a quick question.
Yeah.
For the home gardener that has one or two apple trees, just say, and they're new to it, what? How do you find someone to come and prune your trees, or how do you learn to do it yourself?
I think there's a lot of good resources for learning how to prune. Online, you can find a lot of good publications about pruning, anything from your young trees that you're just getting started to the restoration pruning of older trees that you're trying to rehabilitate. But I teach one of the classes for the Master Gardeners class every year, and we definitely spend some time on pruning in that class as well.
Right. So do you have a whole crew of pruners come in for this very large orchard that you have?
Nope. It's me and one other person do most of the pruning in there. And it is a lot of pruning, but I'm hesitant to let someone without a lot of pruning experience go in there, because these trees are my babies. I've been with them for the last 12 years now. So I don't generally let a lot of unexperienced pruning go on in the orchard out there.
That would be a way to learn, is just to shadow you.
There you go.
Follow
yeah.
you around the orchard, pick the pieces up.
And we usually do incorporate a demonstration pruning in the Master Gardener class as well.
Great, great. Learn a lot from you. I really find I just watch my tree and see where the spurs are and see how it branches and all, and really learn from your individual tree. Do you have a lot of lichen on the trees? Do you worry about that at all?
No, you don't need to worry about that lichen. The lichen's in a symbiotic relationship with that tree, so it's not doing any harm. And it looks nice most of the time.
It's pretty. It's pretty in the winter.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I like something you just said, Julie, just to watch your trees. In the wintertime, you can actually see the shape.
That's right.
And get to know them. And it's kind of an observation thing that can help you understand what's going on and how to help them and prune them.
And
right?
And I think by really taking the time to observe your trees through the growing season, you can plan ahead. If you see in the fall you have one branch that has a lot of fruit on it, but they're not ripening, maybe that branch isn't getting enough sunlight. So then you need to step back and see what's shading this branch, what's preventing these fruit from ripening.
Good. I even watched my cherry tree last year, and I have to prune it so my garden gets more light.
Yeah, definitely.
It's so big. Let's talk about diseases and pest prevention. I'm worried about these trees not dropping their leaves last fall. Should I be?
So I wouldn't be concerned for the life of the tree, but what we could possibly see is quite a bit of dieback. And what that is from is with those trees still holding all those leaves, there's still a lot of moisture in those branches, especially the thin branch tips. So if there was a lot of moisture in those branch tips, that can cause the cells to freeze and break. So what we might actually see is branch tips dying back this spring when it starts flowing again.
Yeah, you'll see it when they bud.
Yeah, and I know this was something that happened. I have some family south of Missoula, and a couple years ago they had a... I think it was an October day that they got down to like -4 or something with the trees all still fully leafed out. And they lost 8 to 12 inches on some of their trees of new growth.
That doesn't sound too bad.
It could definitely be worse.
Yes, it definitely could. Do you spray this time of year? Are you doing your dormant oils, or when are you doing that?
So we generally do our dormant oil spray right when we get done pruning. I feel like that's a good way, because just you're not dealing with oily branches while you're pruning, and then it's also you're opening up that canopy more to make it a little easier to get your spray through the entire canopy.
Okay, but not copper or sulfur. When are those?
So we're not using a copper, but we use some other fungicides, and usually what we're looking at for fungicides is apple scab. And for apple scab, we're treating that based on a degree day calendar. So we're tracking daily temperatures, highs and lows. And by tracking that, you can determine when the fungus is most likely to infect your tree. So that's one of the ways that we keep our sprays to a minimum, is by really timing those sprays to when the pest or disease is most vulnerable.
Okay.
And I think that's a big part of organic gardening in general, where a lot of conventional operations, they spray just based on a schedule rather than what they're actually seeing in the field, where in an organic operation, we're trying to minimize those types of inputs so we can... we can spray when stuff is most likely to be controlled.
All right.
And folks, if you're just tuned in and you're listening to 88.5 KRFY, this is the morning show, and we're here in the studio talking with Kyle Nagy. He's the superintendent and orchard operations manager of the University of Idaho Organic Agriculture. Again, so we'll continue on.
Yes.
Thanks for listening.
Okay. So we discussed disease and pest prevention, and... okay, one more thing that's happening in my yard is my cherry tree dropped all kinds of sap. There's like sap on the ground, and I can't see it running down the tree. I don't know where it came from. Is that related maybe to that freeze?
So the gummy kind of amber that you're seeing flow out of cherry trees, that's called gummosis, and that's actually more of a symptom than an actual disease. So it's something that happens in cherry trees, especially when they're under stress. So that could be stress from a physical injury. From a lot of the times, we'll see if a tree was hit with a lawnmower or a weed whacker or something like that. You'll see some of that, but it can also be from a pest or disease. So when you see that, it's time to start looking around and seeing if you can determine what's the cause of that symptom you're seeing.
Okay.
And also, I'd like to take a quick second to give a little shout out to my daughter, Lark, who's on her way to school right now. I just wanted to say hi quick.
Hi, Lark. Have fun at school. That's great. Okay, then I really do want to discuss soils. We were talking earlier, and you were responsible for planting more than half that orchard out there. Tell us how you planted those trees.
Yeah, so when I came onto the orchard about 12 years ago now, there was around 270 trees in the ground. And since then, we've expanded to around 650 trees. So we have a lot of fruit out there right now. I think when you're coming to planting a fruit tree, you need to decide whether you're going to plant a bare root fruit tree or a potted tree. And I generally look for bare root, mostly because with what we're doing with these heritage varieties, you're more likely to be able to find some of these unique varieties online using a bare root retailer. And generally, I find that a bare root tree that's planted at the same time as a potted tree is generally going to surpass that potted tree, just because you're able to get those roots all headed in the right direction right away.
Right.
So when we're planting, what we'll usually do is dig a hole about twice as wide as the root system of the tree, and then just about as deep. We don't want to have the crown where the roots come up into the trunk. We don't want to have that exposed out of the soil, and we don't want to have that graft between the scion and the rootstock buried in the soil, because then we're just inviting disease in there. So we'll get that tree in that hole, and we'll kind of tease out the roots in all directions to try and keep those from circling, because that can be an issue, especially with potted trees, circling roots. But then when we're doing our backfilling and everything, we generally try not to use too much compost or other soil amendment, because we don't want to get those roots comfortable in this hole that has extra sweet soil in it. We want it to kind of start adapting to the native soil that's going to be that it's going to be living in. So we try not to do a lot of amending or fertilization during planting, but once those roots get established, then we can start feeding the trees.
Will you mulch on top?
So we've used a few different types of mulch. We've used a wood chip mulch, a bark mulch, and what we've kind of landed on, especially around young trees, is a pea gravel mulch. And the pea gravel is helpful because it makes it easy to pull weeds out, those annual weeds that come up right around the base of your tree. It's easy to pull those up. And then it keeps most other stuff out of there, so you're not seeing a whole lot of competition between those young tree roots and the roots of the other vegetation in the area.
Right, right. So keeping that, even if you have a cover crop, keeping those roots kind of away.
Yeah, yep. And then another reason that we like to have that pea gravel near the base of the tree is our rodents, our voles can do a lot of damage, especially to young trees. And the voles like to have cover. They don't like to be out in the open when they're feeding. So if you have tall grass or clover right up against the trunk of your tree, you're creating this habitat that's perfect for them to come in and start gnawing at the bark around that tree. So by having some open space around the base of the tree, you're eliminating the competition from other plants, and you're also preventing voles from being able to get in there and do their damage undercover.
That's great. I like that pea gravel mulch. I would have never thought of that.
Yeah, yep. We've been pretty happy with it.
So finally, our next segment of the show is the mushroom company out of Newport. And we talked a lot about mycelium and that relationship in the soil, and especially with all the publications now of the mother tree and different talk about how related all the roots are. Can you just talk just for a quick minute about how you see that as an important part of your orchard?
Yeah, and it's I think it's an important part of everyone's orchard and everyone's garden, because the more and more studies that we see coming out around sustainable and organic agriculture says everything comes back to that soil. So by treating your soil well, you're going to be treating your plants well. And a lot of that comes to the fungal communities that are in your soil, trying not to disturb those as much as possible. We try to minimize our tillage, just because that can disturb those soil communities, and it takes a long time for those communities to build back up. So by minimizing the amount of tillage is a good thing for sure. And then we're finding all the relationships between these soil-borne bacteria and fungi and nematodes and everything that's, it's just the amount of life that is in a teaspoon of soil is amazing. So being able to treat that soil with respect and allow it to do its work, I think is a big part of it.
The beauty of organic gardening right there starts at the soil.
It definitely
does.
All
right, Kyle, let's give us all your information. You've got a lot of things going on out at the orchard this spring, and let us know what's happening out there and your webpage and where people can contact you. Give it to us. Give it all to us.
Yeah. Yep. So we always have events going on out at the Sandpoint Organic Agriculture Center. Right now, we're in the middle of a Master Gardeners program. They're actually going to be starting their meeting here shortly today. But we also host a lot of other events for the community. We rent our spaces to nonprofit and educational events, which is really great for the community because it sounds like the amount of venues that are available for our local nonprofits are dwindling. Yes. As there's more private events going on. But it's great to have that for the community. We actually have today we have a group that's out there, a bunch of state agencies that are discussing fire control and prevention in North Idaho and putting a plan together for this upcoming fire season. So it's good to be able to have those kind of events out there at the Organic Ag Center. But some of the stuff we're doing right now, we are in the middle of our Heritage Orchard Conference. This is our third year as a webinar series and our fourth year overall. The Heritage Orchard Conference started out as an in-person series, but then COVID hit and we had to pivot. So we turned it into a webinar series and we've had some great popularity with that. What we do now is a monthly webinar series. It starts in October, goes through usually April or so. We cover a variety of topics related to heritage apples and heritage fruit in general. We have some great speakers. We have locals such as David Benscotter with the Lost Apple Project, who is on the planning committee for that. But then we also have some people who are legendary in the heritage apple community, like John Bunker from the Maine Heritage Orchard, who is just one of the most amazing people I've had the opportunity to work with. And this month we actually have a researcher from Utah State University that's going to be discussing indigenous populations' contribution to the propagation and dissemination of peaches across the Southwest.
Wow.
So pivoting away from apples for a month, but I think it's going to be a really interesting talk.
And where would people find more information about that?
So it's a free webinar series, so you can get signed up by visiting our website. If you go to the U of I website and search for the Sandpoint Organic Agriculture Center, you'll be able to find that and get all registered. You can also watch all of our past webinars. So I think we probably have around 25 of those up there. So all kinds of good stuff to watch.
This is pretty amazing that
we
have this, you and this organization out there, the University of Idaho Orchard Organic Agricultural Center. So
fantastic. Thank you so much, Kyle. We have really enjoyed having you. We'll have you again because I know all spring and summer and fall, you have many things going on. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
And this is 88.5 KRFY. This is the morning show. And Julie, what's coming up right now?
Well, right now we have our recorded show with David Keyes and Newport Mushroom Company. And I introduce it on the recording. So let's just go to it, Susie.
Here we go. Thanks for listening, folks. All About Mushrooms.
Thank you, Kyle. Yeah.